Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, July the 31st. And we are going to talk about a troubling issue this hour and wondering what communities should do when it comes to convicted sex offenders who have been released from prison. Should they be able to move back home and live wherever they want? Or does it make sense for communities to do what cities like Milwaukee are doing or considering doing today and banish them from certain areas and forbid them from living near parks or schools or daycare centers or other places where children congregate? The Milwaukee Common Council votes this morning on an ordinance that would put much of the city off limits to offenders who have committed violent sexual crimes or sexual crimes against children, and a growing number of communities have put similar laws in place or are considering them. Does this sex offender zoning make sense to you? After all, who wants a convicted sex offender living next door anyway? Who wants to take the risk that a sex offender would reoffend if he lived near a place where children gathered? Or do you think that this banishment could lead to recidivism too? We will get two different viewpoints on this trend and what would be the safest policy, and welcome your questions and views for both of our guests at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. We will hear from a guest after 7:30 who says this zoning push to keep sex offenders out of most neighborhoods in a city and confined to just a few is, well, kind of nuts. And in this half hour, we will talk with the co-author of Milwaukee's proposed ordinance. Tony Zielinski is the alderman for Milwaukee's 14th District, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
First, tell us what this proposed zoning ordinance would do.
Basically, the ordinance would restrict convicted child sex offenders and those offenders that are on special bulletin notices from living within 2,000 square feet of schools, parks, daycare centers, and playgrounds.
And why are you doing this?
Well, basically, I think that it's not good policy. It's not good for the city of Milwaukee to have convicted child sex offenders living in close proximities to schools, parks, playgrounds, daycare centers. And this is based on firsthand experience with my constituents whenever one of these offenders have moved into the neighborhood. And to be quite frank, many of the constituents that I've talked to are just shocked and amazed that these types of people are allowed to live across the street, in many cases, from schools and daycare centers and other places like that.
Yeah, you know, the sex offender, though, could just wander over to the park and hang out, right?
Well, under this ordinance, we would address loitering as well. So there's two components. One is the residency component, and the other is the loitering component.
Yeah. These, and they are usually men. These men have been released, and they've done their time. Apparently, they have not been deemed dangerous, or they would have been kept for further confinement. Shouldn't they be able to, live life like anyone else?
Well, first off, you presuppose I accept your undefended premise that they are deemed not to be dangerous. There's plenty of people that whose time has expired in the prison system who are released into the community. So that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, certainly not my premise, but a question. I mean, that's we have a law in place in Wisconsin that if a sex offender is considered likely to reoffend, they're not let out of prison.
Well, you know, again, those studies and that determination is completely, subjective. And there's no guarantee, based on the recidivism rates, that those people will not reoffend.
Mm-hmm.
And we're definitely jeopardizing, the public safety. And as far as the recidivism rates, recidivism rates, based on the studies I'm looking at and the reports on those studies, indicate that the sexual assaults reports are vastly underreported. There's 2.5 times more people that engage in sexual assault than are actually reported.
Mm. So I'm wondering, though, of why don't we say not let a convicted bank robber live near a bank? Why are we restricting where former sex offenders can live?
Well, I never received any phone call from any one of my constituents about a bank robber moving in next to a bank, so that really hasn't come up. Right now I'm dealing with a highly contentious issue. When you're talking about a crime like this, which is one of the most heinous crimes that we have on the books, I think it's important to address people's concern. And, you know, in a number of the studies and reports that I'm looking at in this field, one of the things they failed to mention is the effect this has on the quality of life in a particular neighborhood. I've had situations where people put their houses up for sale, mm-hmm. and they moved out of the neighborhood. I mean, if you have kids and there's a convicted pedophile across the street that moves in across the street, I mean, you're outraged. And you have to constantly worry whether, you know, where your kid is when he's playing outside. You have to worry about him or her walking to school. It just totally disrupts the entire, neighborhood. I spoke to a lady in my district who had an adult child sex offender move in, and she's afraid to go in front of her house because the guy glares at all the women in the neighborhood. You know, they got to keep their blinds, closed. They're afraid to go out in front of their house. Why should people have to live like that?
We're talking with Tony Zielinski, alderman for Milwaukee's 14th District. He is co-author of Milwaukee's proposed ordinance that would forbid certain sex offenders, from living within 2,000 feet of any school or daycare center, park or playground, or places where children congregate after the sex offender is released from prison. Common Council will take this ordinance up this morning, and we wonder what questions you have and wonder how you would vote on this proposal. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, July the 31st. Coming up after 7:30, we will be welcoming in a sociologist to questions the proposed zoning ordinance for the city of Milwaukee that would restrict where sex offenders could relocate or where they could live. We will get a different view on this proposed ordinance after 7:30. Right now we're talking with the co-author of the proposed ordinance, Tony Zielinski, alderman for Milwaukee's 14th District, and you can join us with a question or a view at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I see in the paper, Alderman Zielinski, that Mayor Barrett is threatening a veto of this ordinance. Is that going to change your plans in any way today?
Well, it's going to make it more problematic to achieve success on this measure or passage of this measure, obviously. I also noticed that the mayor had indicated that his primary reason for planning on vetoing this particular measure, assuming it passes, is that he doesn't feel that it's right to concentrate these offenders in certain neighborhoods, and that, you know, he certainly wouldn't want one of these offenders across the street. So basically, what I take his quote to mean is that, you know, his major concern is he doesn't want them concentrated in certain areas, but he obviously doesn't like the idea of having, you know, sex offenders, mm-hmm. convicted child sex offenders living across the street.
Yeah, and that is what this would do in effect, because you'd be 2,000 feet from any of these areas, that there are only a few neighborhoods or a few spots in the city where sex offenders could live?
Yeah, it would be very few spots, and based on looking at other examples, both on the municipal level and on the state level, what's happening is that these offenders are moving in outlying areas. If you look at Saturday's paper, for example, they said that some Iowa offenders unable to find housing there have moved to southwestern Wisconsin. Now, Illinois also has a sex offender residency restriction law in that state as well. My question is, and this is what I'm going to attempt to find out, is how many sex offenders have been moving in from Illinois into Wisconsin?
Yeah. I saw a report that said that Iowa has a similar law on the books and that some sex offenders who can't find places to live in Iowa are moving into southwestern Wisconsin.
Right.
Yeah. Tim in Wauwatosa is with us first. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Morning. How are you?
Hi. Good morning.
Say, 2 points. One, the analogy, Joy, that you used, and I know you're exploring the idea, but though of a bank robber, I don't feel that that really works for a couple reasons. One is that's a crime against property and not against people. And second of all, the nature of pedophilia is that it is somehow, in ways that no one really understands, wired into one of humanity's most fundamental instinctual acts. And that just complicates it, because the ability for someone to simply say, no, I'm not going to rob a bank today, is very different, I believe. I've never seen any research or anything, but I'm sure that it's very different from a child's ability to simply say, no, I'm not going to commit this act. And the point that I made to the person who answered the phone was, having been victimized by a pedophile for many years in childhood, it is something that literally steals your life. And I don't think that being tremendously, overly, draconianly punitive towards those folks is going to do any good, but something needs to be looked at, whether it is, okay, there are these areas and the government is willing to sponsor housing of some kind, GPS tracking, I don't know. But my opinion is something needs to be done differently for pedophiles than for folks convicted of other crimes.
Right, right. And Tim, based on the fact that these sex offenders might reoffend, and this is so traumatic, especially to children, you would favor some sort of restrictions on where they can live and to keep them away from living near children.
I tend to err on the side of the rights of citizens when I look at things in general. In this case, in this type of a situation, I'm not saying this is the case, but unless some middle ground can be found, personally, I would favor lifelong incarceration for certain acts of pedophilia.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're dealing with a 17-year-old having sex with a 15-year-old, that's not pedophilia.
Yeah. Tony Zielinski, you want to react?
Well, I'm just telling you that the feedback I get from the overwhelming majority from my constituents about this issue is very powerful and very strong, and they don't want these people, especially if they have kids, in their neighborhoods, and it's not good for the neighborhood, and I'm following through on the desires on the overwhelming majority of my constituents.
Thank you, Tim, for the call. Mary in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Morning.
This is a kind of a hard story to tell. But I have a son who is an adult, was playing asked to play basketball with 14 and 15-year-olds. He had been drinking, my son was, and during the course of this basketball game, which was very short, maybe 15 minutes, broad daylight in the public basketball court, going up for layups, I guess twice my son had touched these boys, and he was he's now been found guilty by a jury for 3 seconds of contact with these boys. It was the second day of the trial. It was 5:55, no verdict. 5 o'clock, the courthouse was going to close. The judge had a 2-day trial the next day in another county. Okay, they came back in guilty. What does that mean? That means my son is now on the sexual offenders list. It doesn't say that he raped a 3-year-old child or he played a rough game of basketball. He has to go through sexual offender classes. His main thing, during the middle of this trial, the judge said, I could tell halfway through your problem was drinking. It was not that you're not a pedophile. He said, a matter of fact, I would like to have you for my neighbor. He said, I just don't want to play basketball with you. And what I'm trying to tell people is that there has got to be some kind of designation. I mean, he's in jail now, not in prison, but he's in jail. And there should be some kind of a designation that after you put in your time, and, you know, there was nothing sexual about this at all.
Well, but is there any distinction, Tony Zielinski, in your proposed ordinance that would allow her son to locate wherever he wants to?
Yes. Basically, there's always going to be situations that this lady described. And what we have built into the ordinance to address a situation like that is we specifically state that a judge would have the authority in special circumstances to allow any person that comes before him to be removed from this list, and those individuals would be able to live wherever they would like.
Yeah, Mary, thank you for calling. I know that must have been a hard story to share. Lisa in Oconto, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My thing is the mayor, I feel, has it quite right. These people are going to be put into one area where their child may not have these kind of laws. So this town is totally open to all these sex offenders. Another one was he was saying about how, you know, parents shouldn't have to worry about their children. It is our job to worry about our children every day. Just because a sex offender is not in our community, don't mean one can't drive to our community. The women who worry about going into their yard, do they worry about driving down the street with that drunk driver coming down the street?
Yeah, well, we're getting off focus there, but does this give the community a false sense of security, Tony Zielinski,
Well, I think that there's two issues. Mm-hmm. One issue is the security, and the other is the form of victimization that these people have to experience on a regular day in and day out basis, knowing that the sex offender, convicted child sex offender, lives across the street where they have children, that lives across the street from the school, the park, or the playground where their kid likes to play. That has not been factored into any of the studies, and I'm amazed at that. But being an elected official on the local level, that has hit me really loud and clear, because that's the type of feedback I'm getting from my constituents. And I don't believe that it's a false sense of security. I've been looking at some data from the Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers, and they mention neighbors as being a consideration here as far as when these crimes are committed. So I think there's a number of benefits to restricting where these individuals live.
Yeah, we just have a minute to go before our news break. Do you think that the Common Council is going to go ahead and pass this today, or maybe just focus in on the loitering aspect of it, as speculated in the paper?
Yeah, I think that the loitering thing will the loitering component will most likely pass today. The other one is much more problematic. But I will say this: if it does not get approved today, or if it does get approved and the mayor vetoes it, I believe it's just a matter of time before we ultimately do pass legislation. If you look at the trends, there's 22 states that have passed this legislation already. Mm-hmm. And you start from 1991, and it's significantly picked up the last few years. Right. You look at the Milwaukeeland area.
It's a matter of time. We get you. We thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tony Zielinski, Alderman for Milwaukee's 14th District. We'll get another viewpoint on this after the news. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Thursday. I'm sorry, it's not a Thursday. It's a Tuesday, July the 31st. I'm Joy Cardine. We will hear in this half hour from a guest who opposes the proposed ordinance that Milwaukee's Common Council will be taking up this morning that would restrict former sex offenders released from prison to only a few neighborhoods in Milwaukee. The ordinance would forbid someone convicted of a violent sexual crime or a sexual crime against children from living within 2,000 feet of places where children congregate, like a playground or a school. And it doesn't leave many areas in the entire city for released sex offenders to live. We heard from the co-author of the ordinance in our first half hour of this part of the program about why he supports this, why he says it's necessary, and what his constituents want. And now we will hear from a guest who says this is not a good idea. And we will again welcome your questions. And we will take your comments at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison 263-1890. This type of ordinance is not only being considered in Milwaukee today at the Common Council meeting, but it has been considered in many other communities across Wisconsin and the Midwest. Stan Stojkovich joins us now. He is the dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's wrong with this idea, keeping former sex offenders from neighborhoods that are full of places where children congregate?
Well, you know, first of all, let's start out with the premise that everybody wants their children to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
I think both supporters and opponents like myself or critics of this kind of ordinance all agree we want to be safe. We want the kids to be safe. We want the community to be safe. But where we disagree, obviously, is the best way to achieve that safety. This measure is overkill, in my opinion. I mean, as you know, Joyce, I mean, I chaired the governor's task force a few years ago to try to find a place in Milwaukee to resolve this issue in a way that would allow us to manage particularly the sexually violent predator, which would be a much smaller subset of the group that we're talking about in this ordinance. And we could not come to any kind of political agreement as to whether or not to do this. The public outcry, fueled by a lot of political misunderstanding and political failure, in my opinion, really led to nothing happening, the issue not being resolved or addressed at all, and then ultimately, you know, cases working themselves through the courts. So I think that, number one, this is just the wrong way of thinking about this process. The idea of banishment, exclusion, doesn't really make a whole heck of a lot of sense, particularly since we have good information on how to really monitor and supervise these people who pose the greatest threat to our children and to the community.
Do we really have a good way to monitor and oversee this?
Well, with the population, remember, sex offender, one of our problems is you have to have a clear definition. I think the ordinance does that at least well. Mm-hmm. It defines it specifically, or at least attempts to define specifically, the kinds of offenders that we need to address. That's a good step in the right direction. But the really violent, sexually violent person, the SVP, for example, makes up about 3 to 5% of the total sex offending distribution. We've got over 20,000 people in the state on the sex offender registry. The fact of the matter is, what's the best way to manage those people that pose the greatest risk? And that's really the issue here. How do we minimize risk?
Yeah. Well, what about we minimize that risk according to the supporters of this ordinance and the fears of these sexual offenders reoffending by not allowing them to live across the street from a park where kids are?
Well, I don't think you do minimize the risk because, first of all, the offenders can go anywhere. All right. The problem in Milwaukee's particular case is its density. The fact of the matter, as you mentioned earlier, and I think it's been brought up already, that the idea that you can have this kind of ordinance in the city of Milwaukee is highly problematical because of just practical reasons. My response to ordinance proposers or supporters is, what do you want to do with these people then? Where are they going to go? I mean, that's the practical. That was the second point I was going to make. There are some practical decisions that have to be made about where these people are going to live. Now, instead, the thinking is, let's all get on this fast train and try to outlaw all these people before you know, they get here. And the thinking is incorrect. The thinking doesn't make sense. You've got a serious problem here. Let's manage it the best way we know how. And the state, through the Department of Health and Family Services and the Department of Corrections, had proven to my committee that they had a 10-year history of managing this problem very, very well. And the fact of the matter is, you can watch these people, you know where they are, you have to intervene. Instead of banishing them, you have to embrace them. You have to do something that allows them to reintegrate back into these communities. Now, the mayor's position in today's paper was that, you know, he doesn't want these sex offender zones, these specific areas. And I understand that logic as well. I understand why his reasoning in that regard. But the fact of the matter is this: sexual violence in this country, and in this state, and in the most city of Milwaukee, is largely committed within the family. And that's a reality we have to face. If we want to deal with sexual violence, if that's the aim here, then we have to talk about family dynamics. this idea of simple banishment really doesn't make any sense and causes a host of other types of problems.
Yeah, according to this this map that was developed by some city staffers, it apparently under this ordinance, if it passes, about 1,600 housing units in five aldermanic districts, just a few small neighborhoods in those five districts, would be available for housing for the sex offenders.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. You know, the practical reality is our committee, when I was chair of the committee, we did the same exhaustive search. We spent months trying to find, and our restriction was 1,000 feet.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit more restrictive. But the fact of the matter is, this is a practical problem that we have to face head on.
Yeah, is it contradictory, Dean Stojkovic, for the mayor to say, I don't want all the sex offenders congregated in one area, that's problematic, so I might veto this ordinance if it passes. But, you know, not be concerned about sex offenders. You know, he's concerned where all the sex offenders are going to live. That's what our guest in the first half hour pointed out. We don't want to have sex offenders, you know, congregated in one neighborhood or living right next door to the park.
Well, the fact of the matter is we have sex offenders living everywhere in the city right now. That's and they're not going to even be affected by this new ordinance. So the reality is these people are going to be part of the community. No matter how distasteful that it is to all of us about their behavior, the fact of the matter is we have laws in place. These people have done their time. They are now out. The question is, what's the best way to manage them? As I said earlier, we all agree we want the safety to be number one. Where we disagree is what's the best way to do it. This strategy is one of banishment for all intents and purposes, at least for the city of Milwaukee. The fact of the matter is, I think you should be engaging and you should be able to watch these people, supervise them, and monitor them. That is much more reasonable.
What do you think about the trend that our guest in the first half hour pointed out, that this is it's just a matter of time for this to happen? 22 states have these types of laws in place, and many other communities are putting these in place.
Well, you know what's going on again? The logic of the position, it's the mad dash before we get caught. Mm. You know, let's do it before they move in. I got news for you. They're already there.
Mm-hmm.
This, to me, is too little, too late, and ineffectual, let alone the attendant consequences of segregating people who, in many cases, if they're under high, high stress, have a much higher likelihood of reoffending. And so instead of banishing people, I think we should embrace these people. I know that sounds very strange to most people, but they're already there in your community. You can go on the sex offender registry, find out by zip code who's already in your community. And again, that's a broad rubric. That would include a whole panoply of sex offender, you know, crimes.
Yeah.
This is a little bit more restrictive.
We do, though, hear these horrific crimes committed by former or convicted sex offenders who are back in the community, who end up doing it again and maybe even, you know, killing some child, and that it's in the news for days, and it scares us.
It does scare us, but we can't allow fear, particularly irrational fear, to guide our policymaking, and that's what I see happening here. That's a mistake. Excuse me. That's a big mistake, in my opinion.
I'll let you get a drink of water while we check our weather forecast, and then we'll take calls for our guest on this proposed ordinance that the Milwaukee Common Council will be taking up this morning. It would forbid sex offenders from living within 2,000 feet of a park or a school or a daycare center or anywhere children congregate. And what this zoning ordinance would do would leave only a very few areas in the entire city of Milwaukee where convicted sex offenders could live. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We heard from the co-author of the ordinance in our first half hour. Right now, we're hearing from Stan Stojkovic, dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee, about why this ordinance and ordinances like it are bad ideas. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Why did I just play Bob Dylan's Forever Young? Well, because we'll talk with Dr. Zorba Pastor coming up after 8 o'clock about whether we can stay forever young, or at least how we can live a longer, sweeter life. Doing this because today's my birthday, and I need some help. And I thought that you would enjoy hearing from Dr. Pastor as well. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. We are talking with Stan Stojkovic for the rest of this hour. He is dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee and a critic of the proposed ordinance that will be taken up by the Milwaukee Common Council today that would banish sex offenders from most neighborhoods in Milwaukee. To the phones we go. Kathy in Appleton is with us. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Good morning. I think what's going on with, you know, the sex offenders and where they can live is certainly a dilemma. And in some ways, I'm glad the discussion is happening because I think, by and large, the sex offender issues have not been in the public arena for a very long time. Research into offenders has only, it's pretty much in its infancy yet. It's only been maybe 30 or 40 years. And so there's very little knowledge as to why sex offenders do this. And so in some respects, keeping them away from those who they can victimize is one way to protect. And in some ways, they're kind of like the nuclear waste. Nobody wants them in the neighborhood, and nobody knows what to do with them. The other concern that I have is there are very few treatment programs that are available for these individuals, and a lot of them, you know, once they're off paper, many of them, you know, don't follow through. And I think their success in treatment needs to be a consideration, and I think there needs to be more treatment programs available. And I know from the work that I do, there are very few practitioners who specialize in this area. So I think, you know, what we've got is kind of a dilemma of where everybody's kind of learning, in a sense, about sex offenders and what needs to happen for them and for the rest of society.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. Dean Stojkovic?
Well, I think the caller makes some good points. One thing, we had historically a dearth of information, good, credible research information about what to do with the more extreme types of offenders. The fact of the matter is there's been an exponential growth, and there's a lot more that we do know. So the question is, what do we know, and how can we use that information to protect us and to enhance the reintegration of these people back in the community? One line of inquiry is that by segregating and separating those people, you're forcing them underground, that the reality is what they'll do is they won't report. You won't know where they are. What they'll do is they'll try to remain anonymous. And largely, except through the commission of another horrific crime, they will remain anonymous. So the question is, what's the best thing to do? To me, it would be much wiser, more prudent for a community to want to engage and work with these people and to do it in a much more positive way. Now, the availability of treatment is problematical. There are limited treatment modalities available to people, and there are limited people who actually provide, as professionals, this kind of counseling. And that's something we're going to have to work on in this. And so maybe as the natural evolution of this problem, as we start to address it and discuss it, we'll come to more, you know, reasonable kinds of solutions as to the best way to handle and manage this population.
Don in Duluth is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks. I wanted to call up and just express a point of view of someone who's worked with families and perpetrators and victims in the county system here in Minnesota for the last 20 years of my work was direct line social casework with these families under court supervision. One of the problems I see is when you use a term like sex offender, you create this huge category of people who have committed a variety of kinds of crimes, and on the one hand, are really different in terms of what brings them to that. The number of people, in my experience, who I would classify as people who need to be, where society needs to be protected from them, is very, very small percentage of the total number of people who get convicted of sexual offending. And I agree with what the professor is saying, that, you know, this is our problem in the community here. I live in Duluth. It's our problem here in this community, like it is in Milwaukee. These people are our citizens who are coming back to us, as are the families, and the victims. And, you know, one of the most tragic parts of this is the loss that children who have been victimized experience when the father is or mother is removed from their lives. It doesn't solve anything for that child oftentimes. Oftentimes, the child needs to have that contact. That parent, though they do bad things, is an important person in their lives. And I've had to work with county attorneys and judges and families and advocacy groups back here to help them understand that this is a human problem and not that these people are not monsters and that the victims are not hopelessly, perpetually damaged. One thing that I would...
I'm sorry. I'm glad you called, Don, but we have many other callers, and I'd like to give our guest a chance to respond to that point. Stan Strykovich?
Well, I agree. As I said earlier, the population, the definition is extremely important. What are you talking about when you say sex offender? The extremely violent and dangerous is less than, in Wisconsin, at least 3-5%, and so we have to focus our efforts, our energies in that way. But I think engagement is the strategy, and I think that's what the caller's talking about.
Thank you very much, Don. Ryan in Madison is with us now. Hi, Ryan.
Good morning. In response to Stan's statement about policymaking based on fear, irregardless of what previous policy has been based upon, the fact remains that these people have failed to show accountability in terms of living their lives within the boundaries of right and wrong. So what happens then is that, yes, they go do the time, they receive whatever treatment possible, and what is afforded to them. But when they come back into the community, you know, are we just supposed to expect that they're going to, again, inherently follow the rules of right and wrong, regardless if these rules have been based on fear or if they've been based on some kind of moral or ethical conduct? I personally just wouldn't want someone like that, and I'm talking about the small percentage, you know, not just the violent offenders, the ones who commit crimes against children. In my eyes and in my opinion, to me, that is a blatant and intentional crime that is meant to victimize somebody who cannot fight back. And I just don't believe that these people can be rehabilitated. I believe that they can be monitored, they can be managed, but I do not believe that they can be rehabilitated. And I believe that in the slightest slip of the people managing, these people will reoffend. And at that time, you know, then it's not a matter of what policy was based on and what kind of resources were and weren't available. What then happens is we have another victim, we have another child, we have another person who has a lifetime of healing to do.
Yeah. What about that, Dean Strykovich?
Well, there's all sorts of assumptions, and you know, the reality is they're already there. Exclusionary policies at this point in time don't make any sense. Those people are already in your communities, and there's a good possibility that you don't know, but you are aware of an individual who has committed some kind of offense that's of a sexual nature that may be violent. The fact then is, what is the best way to manage these people? We do know a lot more about how to manage these people and how to work with these people. Disengaging them from the community makes no sense from where what we know does seem to work. Now, do we know enough? No. But the fact of the matter is we're learning a lot more about this, and I don't think keeping people out of sight, out of mind, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Bill in Central Wisconsin. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I would just like to share with you, and I'd be interested in your thoughts about this, and that is frequently when we have these types of conversations, there's always groups or a group of people that we leave out of these conversations, and we have this ability to look at them different than the people we're talking about. For example, we know for a fact that the clergy has been a problem in this area, yeah, at committing these types of offenses for a long time. We can sit here and for over an hour talk about these offenses and not even mention this group. Well, we just had a major case in California about this.
Well, that's because we're talking about this ordinance. But I don't know, Dean Strykovich, you want to? We're almost out of time. You want to touch on that?
Well, you know, the issue with the clergy and the sexual abuse that occurred in the Roman Catholic Church is clearly a significant issue that we have to address, and that now the church is attempting to address through payments, obviously, in court settlements. But the fact is that that's just an example that sex offending and serious sex offending is already in the community. And the question is, again, we have to be able to address that in an appropriate way.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Stan Stoykovich, Dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee. Thanks to Christina Taylor for producing this hour. And thank you for listening and calling in. I want to take a moment to invite you to join me and other Ideas Network talk show hosts, Kathleen Dunn, Gene Faraca, Ben Marins, for a very special listener appreciation event in Milwaukee. It's going to take place on Sunday, August the 26th. It will be a great time. I'm looking forward to it and meeting you. The event is called Discover the World. It will be held at the New Discovery World Museum on the lakeshore. I was there once before. It's very impressive, really quite stunning. And here's what we're going to do, depending on what ticket package you decide to go with. You can take a trip on the sailing ship Dennis Sullivan. It's a two-and-a-half-hour tour on this schooner ship, an educational sailing expedition, and then we'll have a reception with everyone upon your return. There will be a private tour of the museum. We'll have a buffet dinner. So please consider joining us on Sunday, August 26th for this listener appreciation event. Call 1-800-486-8655 to get more information. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.